A red dwarf star with 7 Earth-sized planets? Sounds like science fiction. No, it's the TRAPPIST-1 system recently discovered, and it rocked the science world because these are rocky worlds, maybe like Earth. Find out what we know and how we know it next on Blue Dot. Nolan, you want to know one question that I get asked a lot that kind of drives me crazy?
Yes.
It's, did you hear they discovered a new planet? And as if that's something really revolutionary, because we've discovered literally thousands of exoplanets, planets beyond our solar system. But the recent announcement that we've discovered several Earth-sized planets orbiting one star really did pique my interest. There's 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting a red dwarf star relatively nearby on the cosmic scale, just 38 light years away. Joining us via Skype to talk about it is Lisa Story Lombardi. She's the project manager for the Spitzer Space Telescope, which is one of the instruments used to confirm the existence of the planets. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start with the name of this system. Why is it called TRAPPIST-1, and how are the 7 planets designated?
Well, it's called TRAPPIST-1 because it is the first planetary system discovered with the TRAPPIST telescope. Now, TRAPPIST stands for Transiting Planets and Planetesimals Small Telescope South. It's a fairly tortured acronym because they actually named the telescope after TRAPPIST beer. It's a the telescope is a joint venture between the University of Liège in Belgium and the Geneva Observatory, and it's located in Chile. They've been observing about 60 stars in their first survey for planets, and TRAPPIST-1 is the first system that they've discovered.
Well, after the initial discovery by this telescope, what other telescopes were involved in finding the planets in the system? Because this has really been an international effort, hasn't it?
It's a real international effort with ground and space-based telescopes. The Very Large Telescope, also located at an ESO observatory in Chile, the Gemini telescope, which is also in Chile. I'm sure there are other telescopes on the ground in Chile that have looked at it. And in space, the Spitzer Space Telescope started looking at it early last year. They had requested direct or discretionary time to observe this amazingly interesting target. Since then, more recently, the Hubble Space Telescope has observed it. And as we speak, K2, the Extended Mission Kepler Telescope, and Spitzer are also observing it.
And Spitzer is your instrument. You're the project
manager. Spitzer is the project I work for, yes.
Yeah, the infrared telescope.
Yes, it's NASA's Infrared Great Observatory.
What do we know about the nature of these planets thus far in terms of their size and composition? Because we hear that they're Earth-sized, Earth-like. How many of them are rocky worlds, and how do we know this?
Well, we are estimating that they are all potentially rocky worlds. And the way we know this is what we look at is the transit measurements from different telescopes at different wavelengths. We know the distance to the star. We can figure out the orbital periods of the planets from seeing repeat transits. And if you have the information of the transits, the transit depth, the transit time that the planet spends going across the face of the star, you can make estimates for the radius and the mass, and you can measure the period. And then from that, you can get the density. So that is why we believe they are all rocky, because they all have sizes that are very similar to the radius of the Earth. It's fascinating. They range from about 3/4 of the size of the Earth to about just 10% larger than the Earth. So when we say Earth-sized, it really is really is very close to the size of the Earth.
Wow, they're all right around Earth size.
And they're all right around that. That's one of the really fascinating things about this system. So it doesn't look like our solar system with small rocky planets and gas giants. There's no gas giants here.
Just Earth-sized planets.
Just Earth-sized planets. Seven of them so far.
So far. So there could be more.
There could be more. Spitzer observed the TRAPPIST-1 system for 21 days continuously, which is how they were able to actually sort out that there are seven planets orbiting by seeing the transits repeating. But the Kepler telescope, K2, is currently observing it for 80 days. If there is a planet that Spitzer didn't see transit because it's further out, so the period is longer than, say, 21 days, and we missed it, K2 could find something, too.
And transit just means the planet is passing in front of the disk of the star, and we see the light curve drop out as that little planet moves across that.
Yes, that's exactly right. It's a very slight dimming of the light from the star.
I saw that they are all tidally locked with one side facing the parent star. Could you explain why that happens? And perhaps you could use our own moon as an example.
Yeah, well, our moon is an excellent example. It happens with the tidal forces with two bodies that are orbiting very close to each other. And as they transfer angular momentum back and forth, and one of them will speed up and the other one will slow down, if they're close together, they will eventually get themselves into a state where the rotation period of the orbiting planet is, the smaller one, is the same as the orbital period. And therefore, we always see the same face of our moon. And the same is true for all seven of these. This solar system is very tiny. It would fit well within the orbit of Mercury in our solar system. And in fact, the Jupiter, as the moons of Jupiter create a larger solar system at Jupiter than TRAPPIST-1 is.
Wow, that really is so tiny.
It's really tiny. Yeah, there's one of the graphics that they prepared for the press release shows a picture of our solar system, TRAPPIST-1, and Jupiter and its major moons, and it's really amazing. It's very tiny. The orbital periods, that's the other reason we could find all these things. The orbital periods range from a day and a half to 20 days. So they're in close and cruising around their star.
So they've got to make a lot of calendars.
Yeah. Yes.
This is very unscientific, but my first thought when you told me all this is that is just so cute. What an adorable little solar system this is.
You know,
these little Earth-like planets.
That is a completely reasonable response. Yes, because it is cute. It's compact and you know, with little planets. Well, actually, that's what so that I have trouble kind of getting a grasp on. They're Earth size, but the star is very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Star is just slightly larger than Jupiter. So,
and that's much smaller than our star.
Much smaller than our sun.
And so these worlds, since they're tidally locked, that means one side is perpetually a night and one side's perpetually a day. What could we infer about what kind of climates they might have with that situation?
Well, see, that's another reason that makes this system so interesting, because we talk about four exoplanetary systems, a habitable zone that we define as the region, basically the distance away from the star where we think planets might be able to support liquid water, since on Earth, liquid water is essential for life. Doesn't mean it's essential for life everywhere. But this solar system, TRAPPIST-1, has three planets in the habitable zone. But if you think about it, since they're tidally locked, there are going to be regions on each planet that are hotter and colder all of the time. So you can think about that there might be places on all of these planets where liquid water could stay in the liquid state. And there's also places where, you know, the water might be just boiling off, and also ice. But it provides kind of an intriguing larger laboratory for looking for places that might have water.
Tell us a bit about the parent star. What can you tell us about it? How is it different from the sun?
It's different from the sun because it's much smaller and much redder. I think it's much younger. I didn't look this up, but I thought it was about a billion years old. And our sun is about 5 billion years old. But stars are stars from the planet's perspective. What we look at as in kind of looking at these exoplanetary systems is really how close are the planets to the star? How much light are they getting? This star is much dimmer than ours. But again, the planets are so close that it's not like it would look like the sun looks from Pluto or something like that. But we initially, I think, when we started really looking in earnest for exoplanets, you know, everybody wanted to find one around an Earth-like, a sun-like star. But it's actually much easier to find them around, we have learned, around these smaller dwarf stars, again, because they're smaller, you can get the planets in closer. We have now, you know, we have Earth-sized planets in much closer. You don't have to wait a year to see the planet transit again, as if somebody somewhere way out in the universe is looking at us, they have to wait a year before they see the Earth transit in front of our sun. So these little dwarf stars are a very rich place to look. The other thing is they're not as bright. The planets are the same size, so as the planet transits in front of the star, it makes a bigger dip than it would if the star was much larger and much brighter, so it's easier to see.
Because it's such a small, dim star, it's actually easier
to see. Yeah, because it's such a small,
system.
Dim star. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have learned this in our searches for exoplanets. Of course, we'd like to find exoplanets everywhere they exist, but at the moment, these are particularly from the ground. This has been a very productive way to look for them. There are other surveys ongoing for more systems like this.
You're listening to Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. When we return, we'll continue our conversation about the TRAPPIST-1 planetary system with Lisa Story Lombardi, project manager for the Spitzer Space Telescope. And we're back on Blue Dot on North State Public Radio. I'm Dave Schlom talking with Lisa Story Lombardi. She's the project manager for the Spitzer Space Telescope. Let's talk about some of the questions we really can't answer right now. We have no way to tell if there's life on these worlds, or really, can we study the atmospheric composition of them now? And my big question is, what will we be able to do soon, like with the next generation instruments, the James Webb Space Telescope, for instance?
You know, those are excellent questions, because of course we all think about, is there life out there? I think most astronomers would probably say, yes, the universe is too big a place for there not to be life in lots of places. But trying to find it is still very difficult. And the first tool we use is we want to take spectra of these planets and try and break down the chemical composition, see if they have an atmosphere. The Hubble Space Telescope took the first observations, taking spectra of it just in December. They did not see an atmosphere. Again, that suggests they are rocky. That doesn't mean there's not some kind of an atmosphere there. It means Hubble wasn't able to detect anything. And the next big thing that was really going to be a tool for studying these systems is the James Webb Space Telescope. The Hubble Space Telescope is a 2.5 meter mirror. It's optimized at optical and near-infrared wavelengths, so wavelengths just redder of what we can see. The James Webb Space Telescope has a 6.5 meter mirror, and it is optimized at near-infrared and mid-infrared wavelengths. So, and this star is brighter the redder you go in the spectrum. That's why it's a bright star for Spitzer, because Spitzer is an infrared telescope. Spitzer can't take any spectra. We just have imaging cameras. But this was a very easy target for Spitzer to observe, and Spitzer only has an 85-centimeter mirror. So a 6.5-meter mirror telescope optimized in the infrared with spectrographs is going to be able to hopefully tell us a whole lot more about atmospheres of these planets, chemical composition, and try and give us hints about whether there are building blocks that we would recognize of life on these planets.
One of the really cool things to do is imagine what it would be like to be on one of these worlds. Can you tell us what the night sky would look like there, if it's clear?
It's what's kind of amazing about this system is, given that the planets are all so close together, you might conceivably see, it might look like multiple moons. When we sit here in our vantage point on the Earth, we see the moon in the night sky, and we didn't all actually understand initially that it was orbiting around us. But I think if we looked up and we could see multiple planets looking like multiple moons. There's a couple of the pieces of artwork, the graphic representations that have been created. I think they're not just science fiction. They were put together based on the properties of these planets and where they are in orbit around TRAPPIST.
So they wouldn't just look like points of light that are bright.
No, like, they might really
Jupiter.
Look like a whole bunch of moons is how I think they might look. It's fascinating to think about a very crowded night sky.
And you mentioned some of the...
I was all excited when the, I think it was Kepler discovered the two planets orbiting together, and it's there was like a Tatooine like it was one planet going around two stars, and so we could see a double sunset. This is kind of the reverse thing. This is, you could see a whole sky full of planets.
And you mentioned the graphic representations. I was able to download a poster from NASA for my classroom just the other day, and you can get a link for that from our website, mynspr.org. It's very beautiful. Can you describe that to us at all, or why they decided to do that?
Yes. In fact, I have that poster. Is the screen lock on my phone now. They started making the, it's the NASA exoplanet program, making the travel posters for exoplanets that harken back to the travel posters for Pan Am and going to exotic locations on an airplane back when that was something really new and exciting. This one, they picked the colors, the reddish color, to be representative actually of the color of the star. That's you know, artist license, but that's why they picked that color. And what the poster is showing is if you were on planet E, which I think is the one in the middle, that could be a hop from there to some of the other planets. So they show people in either a train or a boat, where there's water on TRAPPIST-1E, and then six other planets in the sky. So I just love the poster.
One of the planets on the night side of it has lights.
Yeah, that's serious artist license.
Yeah, so I kind of thought that was cool.
Or maybe, you know, maybe they're doing, you know, volcanic something. I actually haven't asked in detail about that. But given that we've got people on some kind of train or boat, I guess we can have lights on one of the other planets too.
Looked like city lights to me.
Yes, the city lights.
Does the discovery of this system, the TRAPPIST-1 system, imply that there may be a lot more analogs out there, multiple Earth-sized planets? And are these red dwarf stars going to be more and more targeted for these searches?
I think it might. It's very difficult to make a statistical statement when you only have one. But they've surveyed 60, and they found one. So they're preparing to do actually another survey. They have another telescope called Speculos that's going to be able to survey 1,000 stars instead of 60 stars. And if you just take, you know, one in 60, we're going to find a whole lot more. It's not crazy to think that, well, you know, maybe there's two and we just missed it. That would double the sample. I'll be very surprised if it turns out, you know, they survey 1,000 stars and we were just unbelievably lucky and only found one. I think the number of planets that Kepler has been able to identify really do tell us that planets are a very common thing. So I am anticipating we will find more of these.
For you personally, what's been the most interesting or rewarding part of your work on Spitzer with this story?
The most rewarding part with this story has been watching the reaction, primarily through social media and the news, but around the world. This has touched billions of people. It's really exciting and humbling to be involved in something like that. This is a first. For me, I got emails last week from somebody who, one of our previous mission managers, and somebody in his Van Poole's nephew is so excited, and where could he get pictures? So I sent him the links. My son was impressed. It's like, wow. it's been enormously gratifying. The thing that really kind of put me over the edge, I was enjoying it all enormously, was the Google Doodle TRAPPIST-1. That is not something I ever anticipated in my wildest dreams, that we would have a scientific result that had that much outreach and was that exciting. This is a really, it's an iconic system. I think this is a real exciting turning point for this field. And I'm just happy that I got to be involved with a mission that got to be part of it.
And without getting overly political here, but whenever we go through changes in administrations, there's always, a lot of concern about budget cuts and, you know, making sure that we continue funding this kind of pure research. What would you tell our listeners right now? Why is it important to study things like this?
Well, I think it's important to study things like this. I go back to human beings are just very naturally curious about the universe. And this is one of the great benefits of doing astrophysics and astronomy is it is accessible to everybody on the planet. It doesn't take an advanced degree to get interested and excited and try and understand about how the universe that we can see in the night sky, how it works. And all of us who work for projects that are funded by, missions that are funded by NASA and do this, we take it very seriously that this is the taxpayers' money, this is the country's money, this is something special. And it's our job to do the very best we can to try and explore and understand these exciting astronomical and astrophysical things. And it's also our job to share it with the people who are paying for it and the rest of the world. We talk about that. and the federal government, yes, there's always, money's always tight. But NASA and space science at NASA has seen broad bipartisan support from Congress for, well, I think since the agency was founded. So yes, money's always tight, and yes, there are very important things for the government to do, but NASA's a small part of the discretionary budget, and we are hoping that, again, you know, things like this, they excite people, they get people interested in science and technology, the things that, you know, there's a lot that goes into creating the instruments and the facilities and operating them that can do these types of things.
Well, thanks.
And this one in particular, it's really wonderful. This is how astrophysics works. It's generally a big international effort. It's not usually just one person.
Well, thanks for sharing this, you know, incredible story with us.
Well, I am happy to. It's been the most exciting thing. I've been with this mission for 18 years, and it's just a joy. We've had many exciting things, but this takes the cake.
Thanks to our guest today, Lisa Story Lombardi. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Check out this show as well as links to the TRAPPIST-1 discovery on mynspr.org. Follow us on Twitter at NSPRNews or me at Dave Shlom. You can download this program on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. The show is co-produced and engineered by Nolan Ford, who likes TRAPPIST ales as well as planets. And he and I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.